oh my. Really? Oh me, oh my. I was doing show prep earlier this evening, and I got the sense that, we're in for a humdinger of a Moran Monday. But before we dive into Moran Monday, I think a certain amount of a certain modicum of just decent regard for a monumental event is called for. And what I mean by that is that the legislature of the state of New York, in tandem with their governor, made a bold, unequivocal statement late Friday. I got a call from Maura, as it happened. A bold, unequivocal statement about human rights in the United States. The state of New York, as you know, passed a marriage equity bill. And that is a great and glorious moment to be celebrated by all who actually, for whom issues like freedom really matter. So congratulations. Congratulations, New York. You have made a bold and progressive stride forward into the future of humankind. I could not be more proud. I wish the same could happen all over the United States, but it will happen one state at a time. And as the great weight of marriage equity washes across, rolls across the United States, eventually it will become, because, you know, Fat Tony Scalia cannot live forever. Roberts cannot live forever. Alito cannot live forever. And Slappy Thomas cannot live forever. Eventually, marriage equity will be afforded the common dignity of full faith and credit in the Constitution that other things have been. If you go back, for those of you who, like me, may have had a cup of coffee in law school or actually, you know, at practice law or something like that, you probably know the history of driver's licenses and the operation of the automobile. And because there are Supreme Court cases that deal with them. One of them comes out of Massachusetts, if I recall correctly. And it eventually the nation realized it was going to have to do something to deal with all the varied and variegated state laws regarding operations of automobiles. And that while state laws were going to be what state laws were, there had to be a single operating force that said everybody's one license is as good as another. Now, it's a little more complicated in automobile driver's licenses because you've got interstate compacts and stuff like that. But ultimately, there was a decision that that one state could not refuse to recognize another state's driver's license. The same will eventually happen with marriage equality. And I think we will live to see it. I think it will happen in, generally speaking, the next, 15, 20 years, maybe less. And it will be a great day when it does. Yes, yes, Ed, in the chat room, the rats. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Apropos, isn't it? That was an acronym created by a Horn listener, as a matter of fact. So let's all take a moment and realize that we have, in fact, had a great moment in freedom this past Friday. And let us simply revel in the joy of it and the happiness that it will bring to millions of people who may have the full state sanction of their loving relationship. Now, that having been said, it is Moran Monday, you know. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, 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 step right up. You can't tell your Morans without a program, and the horn is the program where you can tell the Morans. You just can't tell them much. That's why they're Morans. Hurry, 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 step right up, for only, only, only the barest of admission fees, the tiniest of charges, less than 5 cents per hour of programming, the horn will help you find the Morans in your neighborhood, in your county, in your state, in your nation, and in your world. Because the world is full of Morans, for there are right-wingers everywhere, and where the right-wingers are, so too there ye will also find the Morans. Step right up, hurry, hurry! Finish up those soda pops, dump out the popcorn, put it in the garbage, and come behind this thin cybernetic veil of fabric where you will see Morans, you will hear Morans. It's radio, not... Get away from me, boy, you're bothering me. You'll hear Morans, the likes of which you scarcely can yourself imagine. Remember, women should retain possession of their purses at all times. Morans cannot be trusted. Small children should be guarded. And no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Moran Monday on the horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. It is. It really is. It's Moran Monday on the horn. I was really looking forward to this. Still am. And before we go to the the most obvious choice that a lot of people have picked up on long before me. I mean, God, how could you not? In conjunction with the fact that it is Moran Monday, and in conjunction with the declaration of marriage equality in the state of New York, well, we kind of have to go to the an obvious Moran. Your nominations are, of course, always welcome. But I got this link from Maura earlier today. Oh, God, it's all, you know, it's always nice to see that the loonies are on the job. And, God, if they aren't some long-lived loonies. Long-lived loonies, say that three times fast. This one being Marion Francis, or Francis Marion Robertson. Lighten up, Francis. No, his name really is Marion. That's why, Patrick, or Pat, Parrig, doesn't appear anywhere in his name. That is, of course, necessarily why he has a fake name. Because everybody knows that Pat is short for Marion, or Francis, or whatever. Nope, that's just a made-up name, just like most everything he believes is made up. It's all made up. It's made up BS, bogus, well, you know. But you may well remember after the Twin Towers came down on September the 11th, 2001, that Jerry Falwell, who has gone to his long home and his long reward and is slowly roasting like the long pig he is over some little spit in hell, if of course hell was real, which it ain't, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson sat down to explain to America that 9/11 happened because of the lesbians and the homos and the liberals and the people for the American way. Right? Remember? Yeah. Well, Jerry has gone on to his long home, so Pat is having to solo. But that's okay. He'll get through. And he jumped right out there today. Because he wanted to make sure that everybody understood what this, all these homos are getting married in New York City. New York City! New York State, too, for that matter. You know, there's a possibility here for a massive change to the entire character of New York State. As gay couples move into New York to enjoy the freedom that exists there. Remember, as noted on the program last week, big chunks of New York State are, in fact, Appalachia. And we can begin a sea change in Appalachia. Or maybe, I don't know. But Pat Robertson was right there to remind America, because he is America's moral conscience, he was right there to remind America just exactly what this legislative determination meant.
I think we need to remember the term sodomy came from a town that was known as Sodom, and Sodom was destroyed by God Almighty, and the thing that they practiced was homosexual activity, and even...
Now, hold on there, Marion. Marion? I don't think this would get out of logic class. This is what you call circular reasoning. We need to remember Sodom, that it was named Sodom, and it's named after sodomy, and God destroyed Sodom because of Sodom. What?
I think we need to remember the term Sodom.
I think you need to begin this little diatribe, Marion, without saying, I think. Because there might be all kinds of things going on inside that vaguely human body of yours. I mean, there's all kinds of digestive processes and pulmonary processes and circulatory processes and skin cells flaking off on the floor there and your muscles growing from your protein shakes and your Sea of Galilee mud mask making your skin rejuvenate itself as it hangs there on your like your cheeks are hanging off your ears and all of that stuff. There's a lot of things going on inside that body of yours, but thinking ain't one of them.
I think we need to remember the term sodomy came from a town that was known as Sodom, and Sodom was destroyed by God Almighty, and the thing that they practiced was homosexual activity, and even they tried to rape angels who came.
Rape? What? They tried to rape the angels? You ever seen what happens when KY Jelly gets on feathers? It's not pretty. That's probably what God meant. I mean, just feathers. You ever seen a feather pillow come apart? Just feathers everywhere. Oh, it was ugly. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. They was trying to rape the angels. I never even knowed that angels had anything to rape. I thought that's why they was angels and we're us. I mean, is that what happens when it rains? Oh, the angels are taking a pee. Right? Angels. Raping angels. Wings. Feathers. Halos. Harps. Angels. Raping. Yeah.
Down there, so I'm sick. That's the kind of people they were.
Yeah, that's the kind of people they were. Hallucinating people. Because they were angels that they were trying to rape. Hey, Pa, can I rape the angel? Well, at least he's off the sheep this week. That's the kind of people they were. Angel rapers. Mother stabbers. Angel rapers. Dear God. That's the kind of people they were. Unicorns in Sodom were not safe. Neither were leprechauns. Nope. Elves. Dwarves. Fairies. All those imaginary creatures. Those sodomites had it in for the imaginary. Oh, dear God. Always after me. Lucky charms, right?
Beyond that, Jesus didn't, when he spoke of Sodom, he didn't say anything about the homosexuality. He talked about just the fact that business was as usual until God decided to destroy it. And he sent an angel down there and he said to Lot and his family, get out now because I'm going to destroy this whole area. So
that's what he said. Get out. Get out. Get out new. Get out new. That's what that's angel talk. Get out new. Angels. I'm not okay. I'm struggling to maintain my composure, to tell you the truth. Raping angels. But there's an interesting little confession in there in the midst of all that sort of, I don't know, psilocybin-induced babble. Jesus said nothing about homosexuality. Nothing. Could that be because there was no homosexuality in Jesus's time? You know, I'm thinking not. I mean, this was, after all, an area that had been Hellenized by the armies of Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great was, come on, it's okay, gay, yes, gay. Otherwise, there would have been an Alexander the Second, which there wasn't. There was a sham marriage to an Afghan barbarian princess named Roxana. It didn't work out well. No, Alexander was most devastated when his lover, the person who meant most to him in this life, died. Threw massive funerary games in Babylon for him, he did. They say that he was told not to drink any wine at all, and somebody slipped in and gave him some wine. But anyway, that area of the world had been significantly affected, impacted, if you will, by the presence of Hellenic culture, which at the time did not particularly frown on certain homosexual acts. So it must certainly be noted that they had to have at least a passing knowledge of it. And yet Jesus really didn't see himself, didn't feel bothered by it. What does that mean? Because he talked plenty about mistreating poor people, and he talked plenty about how it was going to be hard for the rich to get into the kingdom of heaven. He climbed a mountain and gave the biggest sermon of his entire career on top of a mountain. We call it the Sermon on the Mount. Makes it sound like just a little molehill, but no, he climbed up on a mountain and gave a sermon so everybody could see and hear. And he said nothing about gay people. Could that be because he wasn't bothered by the idea that a guy who preaches the concept that that to love one's neighbor is the second commandment, love God being the first, and love thy neighbor as thyself the second, that love is love is love is love? A rose is a rose is a rose, right, Gertrude Stein? Yeah. But there's a little confession there. But Marion just blows right past it. Back to Marion.
Business was as usual until God decided to destroy it. And he sent an angel down there, and he said to Lot and his family, get out now, because I'm going to destroy this whole area. So that's where sodomy came from. We use the term sodomy, and it means Sodom. And what's it like?
No, it doesn't mean Sodom, Pat. Wait, did he just say that? I hope so. You know, somebody may have to take over this show. Just call in and let you go or something. Oh, I gotta go. May have to play some music or something in a minute, because I'm gonna lose it.
Well, we use the term Sodom, and it means Sodom. And what's it like? Well,
what is it like, Marion? I mean, tell us that sodomy. What's it like? What's it like? That nice little rhetorical flourish he's got there. I mean, what? Huh?
These boys do cabaret. These boys are glad to be gay. They're not afraid now. A disco bar in Germany.
No, I don't think that's what Marion means either. Let's try again. I don't know. Maybe he's going to answer his rhetorical question. We'll back up.
We use the term Sodom, and it means Sodom. And what's it like? Well, we're heading that way as a nation.
Come on, Marion. I mean, you've been broadcasting a lot longer than I have. Let me just give you a piece of advice here from a little old internet broadcaster. Don't say sodomy and head at the same time in the same sentence. Just don't do it, okay? Don't do that.
History. There's never been a civilization ever in history that has embraced...
Ever. Not one. Ever. Because Marion knows about all of them. Marion does. Never a civilization in all of history, even the ones... None. That what, Marion?
homosexuality and turned away from traditional fidelity.
Wait. What? Huh? Okay, bear with me. I'm not trying to be...
In history, there's never been a civilization ever in history that has embraced homosexuality and turned away from traditional fidelity, traditional marriage, traditional child rearing.
There he goes again. Not even going to mention it. Now, I'm not the history guy. I'm not the shell history guy. There's lots of people out there in the Horn family that are absolutely steeped in history. In fact, we're about to spend 3 weeks steeped in American history, beginning Wednesday. Tomorrow's a day off, and then Wednesday we start with the coverage of the Prism series. But, net, you know, come on, history fans, history buffs. Never in history. And that's a pretty broad statement, never in history. Never in history has... What is it that they haven't?
Never been a civilization ever in history that has embraced homosexuality and turned away from traditional fidelity, traditional marriage, traditional child rearing, and has survived.
And has survived. How about that? But notice the use of the language. There has never been a civilization in history that has embraced homosexuality and turned away from fidelity and traditional child rearing and has survived. See, I'm fooling around and I'm being playful and stuff because, you know, Marion's a funny guy. But there is some serious monkey business going on with the language. Because, you see, New York State on Friday did not embrace homosexuality. The entire state of New York, for good or ill, is not completely gay now. There's still lots of heterosexual couples and homosexual couples, married and unmarried and single and unattached, and people who have just broken up and have their hearts broken, and people who have the beautiful bursting of emotions that come with a brand new relationship and the uncharted waters of new love. Young folks, old folks, prepubescent folks. There's all kinds of people in New York, and they have not embraced homosexuality. Because there's no such thing. It's right up there with Marion Robertson's the Astro Glide Slicked Angels. They don't exist. Oh, Yogi, now I'm all sticky. No. They're not there. Embrace homosexuality. There's no such thing. What the state of New York said is that it will recognize that gay couples are entitled to the same constitutionally protected rights as straight couples. And that they will no longer discriminate. Obvious, one might think, but not for Marion Robertson. Plum stumps me. But not really. Because you see, when you're dealing with the religion industry, you're dealing with an institution that is just all awash in latency, without a doubt. And for whom the authoritarian power structure inherent in organized religion Is it somehow threat, because it's based on teachings that are perceived to be filled with hate, are somehow threatened by two guys or two women being able to get married? We don't have time to go into the psychology of all that. But listen to the manipulation of language. You know, in other words, did you notice that that embracing homosexuality is going to bring with it a rejection of fidelity? You see, the right wing and the religion industry are victims of their own propaganda. And frankly, their own jealousy. Because when they imagine, because they actually don't know anything about homosexuality beyond what they've seen in the gay porn that they secretly watch and occasionally get caught with, which is all about just plain old grinding sex. And they can't imagine homosexuality as being anything other than that. You know, I can never engage in this discussion, this conversation, without thinking back to the pioneering, groundbreaking work that Peter Godbold did with Strictly Confidential here on the Horn. And he used and he didn't ask the question rhetorically; he asked it genuinely. Why is it when the right wing talks about being gay, all they talk about is sex? Because Marian Robertson has done that very self-same thing all over again here. There's no, to be gay is to, you know, constantly be in, like a rutting dog in the street. And there he was, a rutting on my Mayella. You know, that kind of stuff. The stuff that they used to reserve for describing persons of color. You know, they can't help themselves, Marvelline. The brains is about the size of a walnut, and it ain't nothing but sex. And this is just plain transference. It's the kind of whatever group you hate, whatever group the religion industry hates, they accuse of having rampant, unrestrained, and insufficiently remorseful sex. And this is one of those examples. Let's get back and just finish with Marian real quick.
Single civilization that has survived, that had openly embraced homosexuality. So you say, what's going to happen to America? Well, if history...
Well, okay, here it comes. This is what's going to happen to America. And, you know, Marian Robertson should know because, I mean, he's just that old.
Embraced homosexuality. So you say, what's going to happen to America? Well, if history's any guide, the same thing's going to happen to us. It's not a pretty world we live in right now, and we need all of God's help we can get. And I don't think we're exactly setting ourselves up for his favor.
Oh, Margaret. So what Marian Robertson has just told you is that whatever bad happens to America, he's going to be there to tell you it's because the Homers are getting married in New York and Connecticut and Vermont and Massachusetts and Iowa and such like. It's because of them homosexuals. Because Marian has to have someone to blame. Because Marian lives in a world of hate and retribution. Marian lives in this sort of sick, Calvinistic universe where we remain sinners in the hands of an angry God. And the thing that angers God the most is when two guys pick out a China pattern together. He's an idiot. Pure and simple. Dumber than a handful of hammers. Stupid. I'm not name calling. These are adjectives that are based upon empirical evidence gathered and disseminated. I mean, that was today. That was today. 2011. 21st century. 2,000 years of this hate boiling and roiling around in our culture, and we still haven't found a way to jettison it. But we keep taking those baby steps. And we took one, and it was a pretty big baby step. We took one in New York. It gives you hope for humanity. Oh, I'm always proud when I can lay somebody low. David in Tennessee. Feathers slipped up with the Astroglide? Spit take. Quit it! Had some audio difficulties earlier. I hope we have corrected some of those. It was canned, cramped, and overly compressed because the knobs have been messed with. I hate it when the knobs get messed with. Stream doing okay? Yep, stream's doing fine. This is fun, too. Corey, I got Corey. Angels? Leprechauns? Bob, stop it! My coworkers are looking at me funny. Corey's listening at work on his phone because it is the 21st century. And we do that kind of thing. Oh, it makes me proud. But it's 27 minutes before the hour, and that's just one nominee. That's just one nominee. So we'll take a little break and have a little interlude for the next Moran Monday nominee. The song itself will probably give it away. This is the horn. This is a terrible thing to do to Sam Cooke. I admit it.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know what it was is to. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History. Biology. La ta 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 ta. French I took. Yeah. But I do know that I love you. If you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Don't know much about history. Yeah, you know where we're going. Right here. Right here.
You know, it's just like John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa. That's the kind of spirit that I have too.
Yeah, I got an email earlier today from David in Tennessee. And, oh, God, when I saw When I saw the subject line, I lost it, just like I just did. Subject line, dumb shit hatchet face has... dot, dot, dot. You know, sometimes the nicknames have to be, you know, quick, like Turd Blossom. Sometimes they have to, but sometimes when they're a little bit longer, they just get a little bit more character to them. Dumb shit hatchet face. And the body of the email says, that dumb shit hatchet face has done it again.
I am Michelle Bachmann, and I am running for the President of the United States. Now, David is one of these people, like me, to whom language means a great deal.
I won't speak for David, but, you know, I was taught, you know, I was practically taught sentence diagramming at gunpoint. And so when I see something, and apparently the same thing happens to David, I am Michelle Bachmann, and I am running for the President of the United States. Says David, I know it's small, but it speaks to her abject ignorance. She's not running for the presidency, nor the office of president. She's running for the president. Run, Michelle. Run, says David. Run, Michelle. Run. She's running for the president. We don't know if she's taking a tangential angle or an oblique angle or an acute angle or if she's going, you know, just dead ahead at Barack Obama. I don't know. Is this going to be something like from a Warner Brothers cartoon? With perhaps Barack Obama as Bugs Bunny and Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachmann as the bull? That one? Remember that one? Warner Brothers cartoon fans are out there nodding their heads right now going, yes, yes, we do. This is the one where Bugs dances around the bull and stops and bang, bang, slaps the bull twice on the right. And this is just political fun. This is not a conversation about what Barack Obama is doing right or wrong. This is just for fun. She's running for the president. Because being a flexible and somewhat imprecise language, running for the president has a plethora of meanings. It has myriad meanings. She can be running in his behalf, in his stead, or she can be running at. The one thing she did not say is that she is seeking the office of the president. Is it still official? Good God. She's only 2 points down from Willard strapped my dog to the top of the car and drove on vacation from Massachusetts to Canada, Romney. Oh, okay. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Texas Betsy with a fine sense of the absurd, the sublimely absurd, said she's a pinch runner. Oh, God, it hurts. It hurts. It hurts as us. It does. The nasty, nasty Bachmann, it hurts as us. But that clip, did you hear that clip a minute ago? Yeah. I want to replay that. You know how I am with clips.
Well, what I want them to know is, just like John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa, that's the kind of spirit that I have, too.
Yeah, because, you know, she was born in Waterloo, Iowa. Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachmann was. It's in the water there. There's only one problem. I mean, I'm just looking it up here just to make sure. Anything I see on the internet, I double check. And of course, our greatest source of information is Wikipedia. Yeah. Marion Mitchell. Another Marion! Oh, dear God! It's Marion Morion Monday. Marion Mitchell Morrison, born Marion Robert Morrison, May 26, 1907 to June 11, 1979, better known by his stage name, John Wayne. American film actor, director, and producer, early life, born Marion Robert Morrison in Winterset, Iowa. Yeah. Winterset, Iowa. Not, Now let's go back. We gotta have accuracy here. Not Waterloo, Iowa.
Well, what I want them to know is, just like John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa, that's just the kind of spirit that I have too.
But he wasn't. Who was, besides Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman, who was from Waterloo, Iowa? Michelle said she wants to live in John Wayne's America. And that clip you just heard was actually from an interview with her on Fox News today, where she said, yes, well, you heard it. John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa. That's the kind of spirit I have, too. If you think back and you know your Ronald Reagan history, you might recall one of the times that the great obfuscator, someone mentioned Grover Cleveland to him, who was a president of the United States, Grover Cleveland. And Ronnie said, Grover Cleveland? I played him in a movie once. Mommy. At which point the nation, or at least some of us, stopped and had a collective snicker. Because Ronald Reagan had actually played Grover Cleveland Alexander in a movie once. Grover Cleveland Alexander being a famous baseball pitcher and member of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and was never, ever, ever president of the United States. Well, this is that. You know what? It could be, because remember, Republicans believe in things like demon possession. By the way, Texas Betsy noting that Winterset, Iowa, is almost 3 hours away from Waterloo, Iowa. At least I think that's her meaning. But Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman may actually be possessed by the ghost of the Gipper. Where the Gipper did not know the difference between Grover Cleveland and Grover Cleveland Alexander. I played him in a movie once. Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman doesn't know the difference between, dear God, John Wayne and John Wayne Gacy.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Yes, you will, Princess. You will get the hose.
Yeah. Because it was John Wayne Gacy who was born in Waterloo, Iowa. Not John Wayne. John Wayne Gacy. What was that line again? I want to live in John Wayne's America. John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa. That's the kind of spirit that I have, too. Well, pilgrim, bend over, and then I'm going to bury you under the house. That's what it, rub the lotion on your skin or else you get the hose again, you son of a bitch. On the one hand, I was really looking forward to this Moran Monday. On the other hand, sometimes I don't. Sometimes Moran Monday scares me like it does now. Because again, as I've said time and time and time again, it's not so much that these idiots say these things, it's the number of people for whom it goes right by without even so much as an iota of question. There is roughly somewhere between 20%, 22%, and 27% of the American people who said, well, Marvelline, I want to live in John Wayne's America, too. I can't wait to vote for her. I didn't know she's a fan of the Duke. David in Tennessee noting, seriously, Bob, the nice folks that maintain the John Wayne Museum at his birthplace home in that other Iowa burg may yet well have a thing or two to say to the hatchet-faced dumb shit. John Wayne Gacy, Waterloo, Iowa. Puts the lotion on its skin. This woman, and I may be having some sanity problems. I may have some keep it together problem. Keep it together, Bob. Keep it together. Keep it together. There are millions of people in the several states who are going to vote for her and her U2 vote and her shot heard round the world fired in Concord, New Hampshire. I mean, does this give you pause too? I mean, it's Moran Monday. And God knows this woman is a Moran. So just before showtime, I usually, just to sort of air things out, I drive downtown, walk around, go to the convenience store, stuff like that. And today was a mistake. Shouldn't have done it. I went in. Got me a bottle of pop. Sierra Mist Natural, made with real cane sugar and no high fructose corn syrup. I'll send them a bill. And I saw this young couple standing there, and bless his heart, the one fellow who's kind of pig-eyed and, you know, a little squinty and little black beady eyes and a little pudgy and shaven-headed and wearing boots that weren't, you know, like hunting boots that weren't laced. Like he couldn't trouble himself or else couldn't bend over to lace them. Young man. I tried to sort of beat back my inner jackass and not think any ugly things. And I went back out to jump in the rusty red pickup truck. And for some reason, explainable only in the deepest and furthest corners of the universe, had my attention drawn to my right, where I saw one of those little copyright infringement Calvins that pees on things on redneck cars all over America. You've probably seen it. It's probably even made it into metropolitan areas. You've probably seen it. It's probably made it to civilized parts of the country. Calvin standing there peeing on something like, a lot of times he'll be peeing on Ford or peeing on Chevy. Right? I've seen him peeing on Obama. It's real big with the rednecks and wingnuts, copyright infringement Calvin is. Well, I turned to my right, had my attention, what, huh? And I looked over. And what to my wondering eyes should appear, as the Christmas poem goes, A Visit from St. Nicholas. But lo and behold, and you will see this. You will see this if you actually go to headonradionetwork.com and click on today's Moran Monday show post. You will see the photograph. News Ninja Susan worked tirelessly to get this up there because for some reason, telephone photos are not fondly dealt with by WordPress. You will see this guy's truck. You will see what drew my attention. And this is Calvin wearing a hard hat that says WV Miners. And he's peeing on the words tree huggers. If you look carefully, you can see the reverse image from the other side of this guy's truck where he is peeing on environmentalists. I didn't key his truck. I didn't slash his tires. I didn't do anything. Remember me. I'm nonviolent. I didn't even go in and look him up and go, what kind of dumbass are you? No. I'm older now. I'm 48 and I'm feeling the maturity of my years, and I didn't go in and just pick a fight and go brawling all over the Rippy Mart. No, I just stood in slack-jawed amazement at what I was seeing. Calvin, peeing on the tree huggers because he's a WV miner. But then I thought, okay, but I took the picture. I took the picture, right? And then I get ready to leave and I see the back of the truck. And there's a decal that's real big around here that shows a coal miner with his helmet on and his light shining into the darkness, and he's a crawling through the mine. This decal is most particularly popular with mountaintop removal people, who like to try to convince themselves that they're real miners who risk their lives and go deep underground and, you know, hero stuff instead of fat-ass D9 Caterpillar operators and dump truck drivers. And so there on the back of the truck is this silhouette accompanied by the guy's name, and it's been cut out of a decal that's supposed to go over the entire back of the back glass of the truck of the Confederate flag. God, I felt like I'd really, really hit the bonus round. We got a mountain-removing moron who's also a racist, who proudly puts his nickname on there, and his nickname is Toad. T-O-A-D, Toad. Sometimes. But that's the mood I got put into before I got behind the microphone, Toad. I want you to know that I have grown as a human being. I'm proud of the fact that I am growing and as a human being, because the first thing that went through my little mind was that I wanted to jump out of there and say, son, you done misspelled your nickname. That's not T-O, that's T-U-R-D. You got the T and the D right, and we'll give you half credit for that. And there's lots more like him. Lots more like him. And Michelle Bachmann's batshit crazy message of wanting to live in John Wayne's America, just like Waterloo, Iowa.
Well, what I want them to know is, just like John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa, that's the kind of spirit that I have, too.
The spirit of it puts the lotion on its skin, and then it rubs the lotion in, or else it gets the hose again. And you know what? There's an element of truth to it. Because that's what the Republican Party is telling all of America right now. Well, not all of America. 1% of America is not getting told that. 1% of America is standing over the pit telling 99% of us that we rub the lotion on our skin and we rub the lotion in, or else we get the hose again. That's what they mean when they talk about killing Social Security and killing Medicare and killing Medicaid and destroying public education and destroying every good thing about this country. That's what they mean. We're all in the pit. And the cackling psychopath is at the top, the edge of the pit, looking down at us, and has an IQ somewhere around the temperature of this place in February. Creepy, ain't it? You know, the last last Friday, I got an email from our buddy Tom out in California. He said, welcome back, Bob. I was so glad to hear from Albert again. It's been a long time. He said, I thought you might be interested. My son started his summer job 2 weeks ago, the Monday after graduating from high school. He's working as a lab assistant in the nanofabrication lab at UC Berkeley. So this week he got a letter, attached, congratulating him on having money withheld from his paycheck by Fidelity Investments. I didn't know that Social Security had been repealed yet, but apparently it has for UC employees. My son's comment after reading it was, so I guess I'm being taxed by a corporation. Before your trip, you talked on air about your son's class selections for next year and his choices of ROTC or parenting classes. I gotta tell you, Bob, that one made me scream. But it was, Bob, you gotta get out of there! I've thought it many times listening to you describe life in West Virginia, but this time I screamed. I really screamed. Tom continues, I admire and respect your commitment to improving the situation in Appalachia, but the opportunities are so much better elsewhere. I have to wonder if you couldn't do more from a distance. At least you and your family wouldn't be getting poisoned daily. If ROTC is one of the better high school classes available, that's not much for educational opportunity. There should be AP classes, advanced placement, in math, in biology, chemistry, history, for every kid. Then you get a summer job like my son's. You'll be starting at UC Berkeley in the fall. Didn't get into MIT. And couldn't have hoped to get in without lots of advanced classes. Graduated with a GPA of 4.96 something. You know what? Whenever I hear that from a parent, the parent gets one of these too. Good for Tom's son. He did the work. But Tom was one of the parents who made that possible. Tom says, now, I know I couldn't handle winters in Wisconsin. Maybe you could, but a lot of the country doesn't yet indenture the high school kids. True. But we're one of those parts of the country that is a great big broad avenue that leads into the military meat grinder. That's what we're here for. I don't know if I noted it or not. I may have. But on a per capita basis, West Virginia has had more Congressional Medal of Honor winners than any other state in the Union. On a per capita basis. We've contributed more dead to the war efforts of the United States on a per capita basis than any other state in the Union. We're good at it. We go from squirrel hunting to, well, you know. Tom closes. He says, I put some help in the mail last week. Able to again. Now the last few months have been difficult. Hang in there. And we will hang in there. And I wish it was possible to go somewhere else. I do. Even for just a few months out of the year. I tried desperately to hang on to my father's place in Alabama, but that wasn't possible, and that still grieves me in ways that are difficult to express. But the thing is, we have this place. There is no way in heaven or hell that I could afford to pay rent somewhere or a mortgage note. We have this place. We have this place, and we spent the weekend scrambling around trying to get it to stop raining on stuff that mattered to us in the bedroom. We have this place that needs a roof. But that ain't happening anytime soon. But we have this place. And this place happens to be in a place that would be stunningly beautiful if they would just quit tormenting it. So it looks like we're here for the foreseeable future. And I will remind you that the PRISM series begins on Wednesday. That's PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, PRISM, West Virginia. It is a massive exploration of our American history. And it will take me away from the microphone between tomorrow and July the 14th. We will, however, have all-day-long programming from the PRISM series, and it will run on the regular Horn audio stream, and it will run on our Ustream. John Fox and I have spent hours past counting getting ready for the technical aspects of all of this, and I think we're all good to go. The video should be awesome. The audio should be awesome. And they will be going up on White Rose Society as show files so that you can hear them. But, I mean, you know, it starts tomorrow at 10 and goes to 3. So that's a good solid 5, 6. Well, and then there's an evening session. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of content, not tomorrow, but Wednesday, beginning Wednesday on the Horn. But one of the things I'm not going to get to do is pitch for contributions in that time. And some of you stepped up on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and helped out in a big way, and some of you continue to contribute in my absence. But we are miles behind where we need to be in fundraising. So somewhere along the way, if you could hit the button, the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, or use the snail mail address, either one is fine. It would be huge, because we have bills that have to be paid. And they are about an eighth of an inch away from the back of my neck. It takes a lot to keep all of this going. So just saying. The Thrifty 250 is really, we're talking about, for a $10 a month contribution, it works out to be in less than something on the order of 5 cents per hour. So any help would be massively appreciated. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366. There are two lines remaining open, 877-443-2366. On your nickel, and you can save us a little money by using the direct dial, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It's Moran Monday. Your nominees welcome. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed, 9 past the hour as we begin the second hour of the program, and without any further hesitation, we go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Sir, Bob.
Oh, no.
Bob.
Are you there?
Hello? Bob?
Could it be we're having phone troubles? Oh, dear. Let's see here. What could possibly have gone sideways? All right, let's try another line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Bob.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Who broke the phones? Oh, this is nuts. Stand by just a minute, please, whomever you may be. Give me a minute. I'm going to start some music up and find out what in the world's going on here. Stand by, please. Desperate attempt to salvage the program. stand by just a second. Let me see if maybe this helped or did any good.
Hey there.
There you are. Hallelujah. Okay.
And gee, wonder, you get me. Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, having lost two phone calls, I went to the third phone call. It's all just in order here, so.
Yeah.
No, sometimes you just have to stare at this thing until it stops staring back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if, my beloved cat gets back here sometime, and you know how people suffer from kitty typing?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sometimes I get dosed with kitty engineering.
Oh, fun!
Having
had cats myself, I understand completely.
Well, I do everything in my power to keep her out of here, but sometimes someone will leave the door to the studio open, or Agnes will come through with a big old load of laundry or something, and the cat will just... right. And so, yeah. But I love that cat.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, here's the deal. Besides the usual candidates, have you noticed, have you done any watching of the television about Bachman's announcement?
I've tried to avoid some. I mean, I've got what I've got. You know, she wants to live in John Wayne Gacy's America.
Yeah, the reason I asked is because, you know, they've had these Tea Party people on. And
Now, come on, Susan, wait a minute. The rest of the world can call them Tea Party if they want to.
Okay, teabaggers.
Teabaggers. We are going to call them what they chose, and this is important, what they chose to call themselves. At the very outset, they were the ones who said, teabag Washington before it teabags you.
Yeah. Okay, here's the deal, though. I've noticed something. You remember... I remember distinctly at one time you were talking about Bachman. She was talking on TV and she had this look in her eyes, and we were all wondering what's she on. Basically, you know, just that fixed deer in the headlight stare with this weird look to them.
Well, right, and remember her new nickname, courtesy of David, Dumb Shit Hatchet Face.
Yeah, I love that. Anyway, I've noticed that all of the teabag people who have been on have exactly the same expression. They're on something, all right. I don't think, I would dearly love to think it's drugs, but I don't think it is. I think they're high on fanaticism.
Yeah, their brains have been permanently hardwired or rewired by the freakish politics they espouse.
And God, that's enough to make you ill.
Kind of stuff will rewire your brain. You know, Malloy has joked on a number of, he's not joking, that listening to Limbaugh will hurt your brain. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner identified and published a book on what he calls the Fox Syndrome, shared psychotic disorder.
Well, you remember way back when. During one of the big pushes on the war on drugs, some nonprofit came out with a really good commercial. Frying pan. This is your brain. Cracked an egg into the hot frying pan, sizzling egg. This is your brain on drugs. That's your brain on teabagging.
On right-wing hate.
Yeah.
Distressing, isn't it?
It's enough to make me want to run. But it plays all the way across the board. Christie, that Yahoo, you know, Clarence Thomas. Oh, God, I wish they would impeach him. I know they're not going to, but I can hope. I can pray. Lady, please, allow us to impeach him, please. Oh, and here's the main reason I wanted to call. There are rumors floating around in the state of Oregon.
To wit?
That Earl Blumenau may not run again.
That's not a good thing.
Think about it, though. What politician, what rock-ribbed Democratic politician, liberal politician, has indicated that he will move?
Well, yeah, you're talking about Dennis Kucinich, but the last I heard on that is that Washington State will have an entire new district created that has no representative in it. So it wouldn't even Earl Blumenauer stepping down is a bit disturbing. But I also got a press release from the Campaign for America's Future a little bit ago, in which they're writing a valedictory for the career of Lynn Woolsey from California, California's 6th congressional district. She announced her retirement today. She was one of the founders of the Out of Iraq Coalition, back when that took a lot of guts to even mention.
Yeah. We need people to take their places.
Yeah.
People who are not afraid standing up to these freaks.
I agree.
Because I don't care what the pundits say, I have a feeling that if things go the way they've been going, and if the Republican overreach continues, there's going to be a bloodbath, an electoral bloodbath among the GOP.
See, I'm not trying to just be a little, you know, a little rain cloud or anything, but I don't see it that way. Because, I mean, look at losses. So maybe Earl Blumenauer isn't going to run again. Lynn Woolsey definitely isn't going to run again. And, you know, this is a woman who said, and this is a brilliant quote, no longer will females be considered a pre-existing condition. She has been a strident advocate for universal health care, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are seats that would potentially be put at hazard. Now, to the extent that it's not an incumbent running, yes. Any open seat is a seat at hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Add into this the fact that the solid South is more solid than it has ever been before. I don't, you and I and the rest of the Horn family, Susan, we get ourselves in trouble because we think that the rest of the world is paying attention like we pay attention, or the rest of the country, I should say. They're not. They're really, really not. They're watching NASCAR, and they're watching American Idol, and they're watching football and baseball or whatever happens to be on the screen. And if, by chance, they turn over to CNN or Headline News or CNBC or MSNBC, Fox, or the ABC, CBS, or NBC, they're not going to get much in the way of content, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately what I'm saying is that the 2012 attempt to take back the House of Representatives is far more complex and far more difficult than the optimists on our side of the debate like to think. Because you know what? You're not going to have a net loss of seats in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, West Virginia, Arkansas, Oklahoma, or Texas. Texas is going to literally redraw members of the Democratic members of Congress right out of their seats, okay? And if as long as the Republican Party has that base, then taking back the House of Representatives is a very, very difficult thing. You see what I'm saying?
How come it's always the Republicans who do the redistricting?
Because the Republicans are sharper by orders of magnitude than we are in terms of politics, and they knew that they had to have the House and the state houses in 2010. Because it was a census year. Meanwhile, the firebaggers and such that are out there were hollering, stay home in 2010. And a lot of people did.
So, in other words, basically, somebody with who could put together a campaign like Barack Obama did should have waited until 2012.
I don't know necessarily. You know, it's just a matter of the way that we approach electoral politics and the way the Republicans do. The Republicans approach electoral politics, Susan, as blood sport. We oppose it as checkers. It's not chess and checkers. It's checkers and
gladiators.
Gladiators, right. Oh, I've jumped you. Oh, I've carved your limb off. And I'm not trying to just be negative, but you can't look at the electoral map and see a hell of a lot of change happening in the Confederacy, or Kansas, or Missouri, or Iowa. And the places where there are changes are the kind of changes we don't need. Where given a solid base from which to assault the nation, the Republican Party can mount challenges against people we never dreamed of. You know, Keith Ellison was a big star in Minneapolis at Netroots Nation. He'll have to campaign his butt off again. There is, and I guess what I'm saying is that with very few exceptions, there is no such thing as a safe Democratic seat.
Because even after what the Republicans have done in Michigan?
Yeah, even after. I mean, come on. The people of Wisconsin busted their humps to get rid of that Prosser creep. And yet, you know, here's another Moran nominee. The guy physically assaulted one of his fellow justices over the weekend.
Yeah, I know.
He choked her.
Mm-hmm.
And when they tried to throw him out, when they tried to throw him out, the Republican Party mysteriously found, oh, whoopsie, we forgot to count the 1,500 votes that were in the county clerk's drawer.
It was 7,000, and they were on her home laptop.
Right, okay, but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm. It's called election fraud.
Well, it's called cheating.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Republicans are willing to cheat. I mean, it's 11 years since the 2000 election now. Have we forgotten Florida?
Does anybody know how to get...
Ohio in 2004?
Does anybody know how to get hold of Anonymous? maybe somebody should get a hold of Anonymous and say, hey, guys, you want to make a difference? Think of all those.
Well, sure, but I come back to my argument, Susan, about the Solid South. They have a base from which to operate. We don't.
Provided the votes are counted.
Wait. You put the show post up. You saw that truck.
Yeah.
That truck is replicated millions of times over all over the Solid South.
I understand that.
The Republicans don't need election fraud to win in the South.
No. We would. Think about it, honey. Hey, Anonymous, you listening?
And the Republicans would have the hundreds of millions of dollars to pour into a recount campaign, and we would be tarred forevermore as the ones who cheated. Because the for-profit media would forget Florida, would forget Ohio, and boom.
How do you recount?
It depends on the state. I mean, you can't recount an electronic vote. You just plug the thing in and make it spit out its votes again.
Exactly. They are idiotically easy to hack. I could hack one of the stupid things. I'm not going to, Agent Fred. Don't worry about that. I'm not gonna. But if somebody like me can hack one,
I know. But the thing is, it can't. You know, that kind of election fraud only works in 52 to 48 elections. All right, or 51-49 elections. Republicans don't win elections that way in the South.
Yeah.
They win elections 82 to 18.
May I switch the subject?
Absolutely. Sure.
I have another nominee.
Do please.
The man who seems to make a career out of putting his big fat foot into his big fat face.
Christie?
You got it.
Yeah, that was just too easy.
I mean, geez, please. Oh.
And the people of New Jersey elected him.
Yeah, that's what gets me.
But they elected him. They elected him with tons of again, Citizens United money.
Yeah. You know what bothers me?
What?
Especially about Michigan. No, because they've got these martial law type things. You have not heard of one lawsuit being filed. Now, I don't know anything more blatantly unconstitutional than going in and dissolving local governments.
Oh, I think there were lawsuits filed. I recall stories.
Well, boy, they sure went down the memory hole.
Well, that's part of the reason you want to control the courts.
Yeah, we're just screwed. Let's face it, we're screwed.
I'm not willing to go that far. I'm just saying that if you, well, you know me, I'm a Southerner. There's an old joke about election day and campaigning, and a former Confederate officer was on the stump in Georgia, and one of the folks out in the crowd hollered at him and said, "Colonel, why should we vote for you? We went to war, and you told us we could beat them Yankees with sticks and stones." The old colonel looked at him and said, "By golly, son, we could have, but they wouldn't use sticks and stones." And that's the thing. You've at least got to appreciate how hard your opponent is willing to fight to get what it wants. And a Republican will lie. A Republican will cheat. A Republican will steal. A Republican will kill.
And then
to get their political way.
And blame it all on you.
Right.
These people are born sociopaths. They make Jack the Ripper seem like a panty waist. I'm sorry, they do.
Well, in one way they do, in another way they don't, Susan, because...
Well,
The teabaggers are not the 1%. They are fools who are being used.
Yeah. Jackson Ripper, all he did was he went in and he ripped these women up and killed them. They're dead. It was, you know, it was very gory, but they went, they were dead pretty quick. These people are killing the souls of every man, woman, and child in this country. I consider that a worse crime. So I consider them worse than Jack the Ripper. The Ripper, at least.
It's certainly an argument that can be made.
He was front about.
Well, the way I look at it, if you want to use the Jack the Ripper analogy, is that the teabaggers and anybody who is not in the top 1% of the wage earning of the wealth class and supports Republican policies is they're not Jack the Ripper. They're honing Jack's knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're staying there to make it easy. Take that first. The same. They're just helping along. The only worse is if you pass on your struck a match.
Indeed. Susan, I'm going to run. We've got a stack here. So thanks very much for helping getting them light up, and thank you for being there when I finally get the phones working. I might have cried otherwise.
Well, I'm glad that you're not going to cry, at least.
Yeah, me crying on the air, it really stinks. We'll talk to you soon.
Give my love to Agnes and
sure
everybody.
Will.
Bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan. And by the way, yeah, those pictures I mentioned, go have a look. They're pretty disturbing. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I guess you better get your phone straightened out, or I'm going to have to come down there and correct the situation.
That's right, Pilgrim. You do that. What's up, Jim?
As Michelle Bachman is concerned, I'm going to have to come down there and open up a can of whoop-ass on her for getting our...
Or maybe a can of Clown White. I don't, you know, oof.
What is it with this woman?
Jim, there's all kinds of stuff about these little so-called mistakes she makes. And one of the things it tells me is that there's nobody. She is a cult of personality.
What is it about her rearing 23 children or something like that? Is that the latest thing I've heard about her?
Yeah, tons of foster children. She also says that she and her family never benefited from the earmarks that she gave to herself, which is an outright lie. But again, the thing that scares me, Jim, is that these are all facts, and facts matter to people like you, me, the rest of the Horn family. But for the other side, they just, you know, they live in Reagan land where, and, you know, he actually said it, I'm sure you remember, well, facts are stupid things. Remember that when he said facts are stupid things? Yeah. Facts don't matter.
I certainly do. And they matter little or less even now.
Yeah, I mean, because when you can stand up and say that the shot heard round the world was fired in Concord, New Hampshire, and a significant plurality of the United States goes, well, you know, that's all right.
Well, they don't care about that. I mean, you know, because they don't know any difference in the first place. And, of course, you know, they just applaud her for having said, well, I made a mistake, and whoever gave you that information... I didn't throw him under the bus. I put myself under the bus, and I assume responsibility for it, which is exactly what she said.
And I guess that's what we can expect about the difference between John Wayne and John Wayne Gacy.
I mean, these things don't matter a whit to these individuals once they have been brainwashed by Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and other proponents of their doctrines or lack of doctrines, their myths or outright lies. I mean, you know, hell, I've always said the whole thing behind it is the propagation of the big lie.
And they are past masters at it, Jim. They truly, truly are.
Well, I mean,
I really can't wrap, and I doubt you can either, or anybody else of sound mind, can't wrap my head around how theirs work. I mean, I just got notification of a statement made by Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. He says that Barack Obama threw Hosni Mubarak under the bus. That the pro-democracy movement in Egypt was a bad thing.
Well?
I mean, does that just kind of make you want to run screaming a little bit?
Not really, Bob, because I understand the logic that he's using behind it, or the lack of logic, or not logic, but it's half-truths. Half-truths that are statements that have enough truth within them to lend it just enough of veracity to make people believe it. I mean, I'm going back to what I've said before. Joseph Goebbels was a master at this type thing.
And you know what? If you were really good at Photoshop, you could take Goebbels and Karl Rove and set them next to each other, and you would find a striking resemblance, more than philosophically.
Well, hell, I think Joseph Goebbels looked a hell of a lot better than Karl Rove, but nonetheless...
that was only because he had the snappy uniforms.
Well, Goebbels had more hair and stuff like that, and probably was more intelligent. I mean, the guy was a PhD, and, you know, whatever, and was a very serious intellectual in many ways. And had been born with a club foot, and that caused him a lot of problems in his life and stuff. But nonetheless, I don't want to get off on this Third Reich business. But
it's kind of hard to avoid the comparisons when they present themselves so easily, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is to me. And I think that Susan is very hopeful, and that's great to be hopeful, but I think the pendulum is swinging so far to the right that it's going to be a long time before it ever comes back the other way. And when you talk about the state of Texas being redistricted, then you've got some serious electoral problems there for any change that might be forthcoming, because, I mean, you know, as far as back as 1960, I mean, Kennedy and Johnson despised each other. They
yeah.
had no love for each other. But Kennedy knew he couldn't carry that election without Texas. And you cannot carry the presidency without Texas. There is no way. And the solid South has become so thoroughly entrenched and thoroughly Republicanized.
And it's not always the so-called. It's not just the geographic South, Jim. Consider another Moran Monday nominee. This absolute creep, Todd Akin from Missouri.
Oh yeah.
The guy, and just as a reminder, you know, he was called upon to apologize for his recent statement that the difference between Republicans and Democrats is that Democrats hate God. I mean,
well, going back to what you were saying at the initial part of your program.
But he didn't apologize, and he won't.
No, but I mean this thing in New York now with the recognition of gay marriage. Now, they're going to make all types of capital out of this.
And I'm sure if you were to look on any given right-wing, especially religion industry email list right now, you would find that they are raising millions of dollars.
Of course they are. And, you know, this is, you know, when I heard that that had passed, in one way I was very, very happy. But looking down the pike, I just realized exactly what political capital they were going to make of this.
Well, and there's more than one way to look at that political capital, Jim. Sandra sent me a news story a little bit ago. She said, I'm happy about what happened in New York, but notice that it couldn't happen without the rich. And it is a news story from the New York Times from the 25th of June. It says, the headline says, Behind New York Gay Marriage, an Unlikely Mix of Forces. And what the story is about, Jim, is the fact that Governor Cuomo in New York called together his advisors and in turn called in a group of super rich Republican donors. And that Cuomo explained to them that he was going to move heaven and earth to get marriage equality passed in New York. And that he needed these big money Republicans to provide cover to some New York state legislative Republicans so that they could come out and vote for the bill. And let's see, billionaire Paul Singer, whose son is gay, hedge fund managers Cliff Asness and Daniel Loeb. And the news story says they had the influence and the money to insulate nervous senators from conservative backlash if they supported the marriage measure. And they were inclined to see the issue as one of personal freedom consistent with their more libertarian views.
Yeah, but that's in the state of New York.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, if I were a Republican strategist, I would have supported it too. To give people like Pat Robertson and his fellow travelers another club with which to pound Democrats. I mean, you know, it's a matter of what I call oblique strategies.
The story goes on, that's true, Jim, and the story goes on and says, within days, the wealthy Republicans sent back word. They were on board. Each of them cut six-figure checks to the lobbying campaign that eventually totaled more than $1 million.
Right.
It continues, and the story says, Behind the scenes, it was really about a Republican Party reckoning with a profoundly changing power dynamic where Wall Street donors and gay rights advocates demonstrated more might and muscle than a Roman Catholic hierarchy and an ineffective opposition. And that was, you know, and as you note, that is in New York. But the way this is going to play in Kansas, where the governor is a crazy religious fanatic named Sam Brownback.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's gonna be it's gonna blow up right in their faces.
I mean, what if we had the ability? I can only imagine what it would have sounded like to tune in talk radio from. And I'm not talking about the national stuff like Limbaugh. I'm talking about the ninth tier local talkers in places like Birmingham, Alabama, or Jackson, Mississippi, or any number of podunk burgs all over the South. And just to hear the upstanding, godly, God-fearing Christians calling up to talk about them heathens in New York.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Bob. I mean, they're going to use this against us. They're going to use this against any liberal or any progressive or any Democrat or anyone who doesn't subscribe to their party line as a huge club. I mean, for New York, it was a tremendous victory. Yes, I will give it that. And I hope that it stands.
Well, there is something about which to be a little bit concerned where that, you said you hope it stands. You know, of course, there will be court challenges.
Of course there will be, and I can guarantee you it's all over with.
Well, there's something inside that, and I don't know the factuality of it, but I had an email exchange with our good friend John in New York, who called last week, and he told me that he was informed, and you know a good bit about legislation, Jim. He says that this legislation in New York was passed without a severability clause, and you know what those are, right?
Right.
A severability clause is something that is almost always at the end of a piece of legislation that says if any portion of the legislation is found to be unconstitutional, that it will be cut out from the legislation and the rest of the legislation will stand. If a bill doesn't have a severability clause, then if any portion of the bill is unconstitutional, the whole thing goes. So the one thing to be mindful of in the moments of celebration is that this ain't over. And it's not even over in New York.
It's not. And you know, I can remember back in 2004 when Gavin Newsom was trying to do the same thing in San Francisco. And we talked about this program then.
You're right.
All things were happening now, just going to blow back right face of people who trying to do good. In the end, they end up really shooting themselves in the foot. And I hate to do that, but it's just the way I feel.
I understand. And yeah, remember, the Roman Catholic Archdiocese is not going to back down. The Archbishop of New York, a guy named Dolan, and remember, Cuomo is a Roman Catholic himself. The Archbishop of New York suggested that Cuomo should be denied communion over this.
They did the same to John Kerry.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's just bald-faced politics. And Jim, when do we push back and say, because, you know, there's a difference between arguing a religious position and arguing a political position. When a church says we oppose gay marriage, that's fine. That's within their First Amendment rights. But when they enter the political realm to challenge it and say that nobody else can have it because of their particular religious stance, how is that not a violation of their 501c3 tax-exempt status?
Oh, I agree. But boy, let's get it around.
Well, it will be interesting to watch develop, Jim. I really appreciate you calling in, but for some reason you're breaking up, and I don't know if I've got bandwidth problems or whatever. But
yeah, that was Susan.
Yeah, and the same thing's happening again. So, geez, never a dull moment. Jim, thank you very kindly, and have a great night.
Thank you.
All right, bye now.
Bye now.
Someday we'll get all this sorted out. Hey, welcome to the program. Yes. Andy, goodness me. Let's try and let's see if you're breaking up.
Can you hear me okay?
You are breaking up. Let me put you back on hold and try to solve this real quick, okay?
Okay.
I'll come back to you. Stand by. Well, shoot. Okay, let's. We need a little break. It's coming up on the 8 o'clock hour here on the East Coast. We will take a little break and come back at it. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I tell you, sometimes the tech stuff really does mess with my head. But we'll come back. This is The Horn.
About the goings on in self-destructive zones.
We'll have another go at this and hope for the best. Let's see if we can get Andy back on the air. Are you there, Andy?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Dramatically better, yes. Thank you. Some of the
bandwidth under control, huh?
Well, some yeah, and I don't understand why, but some things I guess I'm not supposed to understand. But, no, I mean, we're supposed to have 1.5 up and 1.5 down, and we don't sometimes.
Right. Well, to dovetail off what you were just talking about that vote in New York with the Marriage Act, you know, they got to give a lot of credit to the head of the Senate. I think his name is Skelios, Dean Skelios, for even letting the vote occur, because they have even stopped the vote because, of course, they ran the Senate in New York.
Right.
The Republicans had the majority. So if they wanted to, they didn't even have to have that vote come up, but they did. And I think they knew what was in the cards already.
Well, I think they knew that it was political death for them. You know, whereas Jim noted, it's going to be something that the right wing is going to fundraise on like wild things around the rest of the country. It was political death for the Republican Party to stop it again in New York. Especially, as that New York Times story noted, with the real walking around money behind the bill, and you know, it's the money that pushed it over, not morals, not right versus wrong, not a dedication to constitutional principles of equality under the law, but money. Money did it, and I'm not trying to take anything away by saying that, Andy. It's just, you know, it's the American reality, isn't it?
No doubt about it. There's Libertarian Wall Street guys that you mentioned definitely got behind that, and believe me, I know a little bit about Wall Street. There's a lot of gay individuals that work on Wall Street. They have a lot of power. So, that helps with the money. There is power. There are gay people that work on Wall Street and gay women. And they have money. Not only the ones you mentioned, but, you know, there's other influencers.
Which in a way makes New York sort of, and I know it's kind of ironic to point out, but it's almost like small town politics ruled the day in New York.
Right. And on social issues, the Republicans there aren't nearly as ideological as they are in the Midwest with the Bachmans and so forth.
Yeah, this is New York. This is the home of Rockefeller Republicans, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Social issues go out the window. They're more libertarian, just like those individuals, like Cliff Asness, for one. He proclaims himself to be a libertarian. Now, they don't care what you do in the bedroom. Period.
Yeah, they care. They don't care what's in the bedroom. They care what's in the bank.
Right. So I wanted to bring up another issue. Well, one thing, too, you're talking about Chris Christie.
Yeah.
You might know, I grew up in New Jersey. And I was just living there. I found out my sister voted for Chris Christie.
Oh, Jesus. That always hurts.
I haven't spoken to her since. It's been about a year. I cannot, you know, we grew up in a working class household with a father who was a UAW shop steward. I cannot believe that she didn't understand who's on her side and who's not. But she totally got taken in by the lower my taxes bumper sticker. That's all that mattered to her, was to get her taxes lowered. Period.
Well, and I'm not trying to be an ass or anything, but yeah, how dramatically wealthy is she? Because
she's selling her home right now because she can't afford it. And she works two jobs. She has an 8-hour weekly day job, and she's working another job to pay about $20,000 in credit card debts.
Jesus.
She's a low information person and a low, I hate to say this about my sister, but a low information person and a low information voter. Just trying to struggle by. And here's classic. She votes completely against her interest. And as much as I try to get it through her head, what she has done, I cannot penetrate. I don't know what to say.
And yet she wasn't voting, and I'm assuming she's in New Jersey. I'm assuming she wasn't, you know, she wasn't moved by voting for the little fetuses.
No, not at all. It all was about taxes. That's all. That was her only issue. That's all that mattered. Lowering her taxes so she could afford her home, because she can't afford her home.
And does she drive to work, or does she get on a train?
She drives.
And so she gets to look at the state of the roads every day? And, I guess I'm in a worse place than you are. I said a little bit earlier, Andy, that Horn family, I live in an insulated world where you know, thought processes don't function that way.
Right. Well, there's no reasoning behind it. You know, there's a thousand reasons why she shouldn't have voted the way she did, but she did. And it just doesn't penetrate. I mean, you could talk to her till you're blue in the face. It just doesn't penetrate. Another thing I wanted to bring up, you were talking to Sandra about the what was going on with that Janice Hahn, I think it's California 36th.
Yes.
To get off the subject. And I'm even getting text messages about some strange stuff that she had done with releasing prisoners or being friends with people who had committed crimes. It's really, boy, they're doing the full court press on that one.
Well, as far as I can tell, I did a little research after Friday's show, Andy, and it looks like a Willie Horton job.
Yeah. Now, the only thing is, she is a DLCer. She's the right-wing Democratic candidate. The progressives all got knocked out.
Right.
Progressives should have been in there. Deborah Bowen or Marcy Winograd was my top pick, but they got knocked out, and now you got the DLC or so. I'm not sure how. I don't feel too bad about it, but it'll be worse with a Republican, but not orders of magnitude.
No, but you know, the news of Lynn Woolsey's retirement, it was a little bit disturbing.
Well, you got Norman Solomon, though, going to try to pop in there.
And good luck to him.
Great.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work on his campaign. That's something I want to do this summer and fall. I think he's a great candidate. That's where progressives should be spending their time that live in the Bay Area. Because he'd be a great candidate if we can get him in there. Which we should, because Marin is a very, very liberal and progressive area.
As opposed to some other areas out there that one would expect to be but aren't?
Well, not necessarily, but at least a DLC candidate. I would think that's another district where your biggest competition is going to come from another Democrat, not a Republican.
Right, and one further to the right?
Correct. It'll be who the DLC puts up against Norman Solomon, which I don't know who that is, but I would imagine somebody will come out of the woodwork. You know, Henry Waxman, too, talking about that 36th district, Henry Waxman was one of the main reasons that Janice Hahn did get in. I just want to mention, too, I'm very upset. There's no love lost between me and Henry Waxman. And he's doing the, he's turning the screws on Greece and Turkey to stop the Freedom Flotilla from going out there. I think
there's
50 Americans. One of them's Ray McGovern, Medea Benjamin, and a host of others on that Freedom Flotilla trying to get into Gaza. And Henry Waxman wrote a letter with, like, I think 25 other representatives, a lot of them Democrats, maybe even up to 50, telling the governments of Turkey and Greece not to let the Freedom Flotilla flow out, you know, go out of there, leave port to go to Gaza. So here again, Henry Waxman getting the job done for the Israeli lobby.
Nice. Well, I did notice the call that went out to Hillary Clinton to, you know, to guarantee the flotilla's safety. And I guess Alice Walker is going to be on this. I wonder if the Israelis are willing to murder Alice Walker.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she is going to. Now that you mention it, I remember hearing her name mentioned as one of the people. In fact, I heard her give a talk here locally on one of the local stations, the Pacifica Network. She talked about being on the flotilla because people were pretty amazed because she has a lot to lose because she's, you know, very... she's done very well for herself, and she's taken a big risk after they just knocked off 9 people the last time with the Mavi Marmara. I mean, you don't know what these Israelis are capable of. These people are nuts. They're nuts. And
well,
and they can get away with it.
I'm not even comfortable with saying they're nuts. What it is the Israel knows that Israel operates with absolute worldwide impunity, that any attempt to rein Israel in the Security Council will be met with a U.S. veto, if not Great Britain's as well. And
correct.
Yeah.
International laws mean nothing to them, and they continue to get away with it because the U.S. will stomp on anything, like the Goldstein Report. They'll stomp on anything that the international community tries to do to rein in Israel, period. And Hillary Clinton will be right there with them, making sure that they're safe because it's, you know, all about Israel's security. That's all that matters. Damn the Palestinians. They can go die in that concentration camp they got over there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Alan Grayson all over again, Andy. Die quickly. Although,
don't get sick.
Yeah.
If you do get sick, die quickly. Absolutely.
Yeah, don't get dispossessed of your ancestral homelands, and if you do get dispossessed of your ancestral homelands, die quickly.
Right. And don't try to get back. Well, what was it, a few weeks ago where they were having the demonstrations in the border areas, and these unarmed people were just coming over the borders, and the Israelis were shooting them to death.
Yeah, mowing them down.
20 of them in one day. You know, you just run over and they say, oh, we're shooting at their feet. just trying to scare them. Well, how'd you kill 20? Gee whiz, you killed 20 of them.
Well, you know, back to the rifle range for you.
Yeah, I guess you missed a feat.
Yeah, right. Well, no, they were crawling. That's what they were doing.
Right.
No, we shot their feet, they fell down, and then we accidentally shot them in the head.
Like you said, it's pure impunity. They can get away with anything they want. There's no rules for the Israelis in the international community with the help of the U.S. No rules. International law means nothing. Zero, zilch, nada.
Zip.
Anyway, it's a shit crime.
Well, it is.
I want to change the subject. A little blast out for USA, USA, USA. I mentioned in an email to you the other day that we're number one in millionaires and grew 8.3% over the previous year. So the millionaires are doing better. It was in the Financial Times.
God.
We got 3.1 million of them in the U.S., more than any other country. The next largest country has 1.7 million, and that's Japan. So we're way ahead of everybody else.
And you're right, absolutely. We got to start up the USA, USA chanting. But there's something with which, and everybody understands that you're talking tongue-in-cheek, we're number one, we're number one. But there's something against which I think, and I guess some right-wingers or whatever, if they were allowed on the program, would maybe take issue with me. But there's something with which I think we should counterbalance that news. And that is a new study that's out. And it came out from, I believe, the University of Washington. And it's really quite fascinating. Because at the same time that the United States is growing millionaires, women's lives are shortening. There's a new study out from a group called the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. And that's at the University of Washington, Andy. And in 313 counties in the United States, women's life expectancy is in actual decline.
I thought the average for the U.S. was 78. And probably women might be a little higher than the average, because the men are always lower. So was it around 78 somewhere?
It's in the mid to high 70s, but in places like Central Appalachia, where I live, it's going backwards.
Right, and I might have heard a little bit about that study, where also they indicated something about the poverty and the lack of health care in those areas.
Well, the biggest red,
much higher.
The biggest red to orange to bright yellow splotches, which indicates declining health care or declining life expectancy, is in a band that runs from west central Texas to West Virginia, and includes, of course, all of the Confederacy. And it's stunning, Andy, because on the other hand, and in the map I'm looking at, blue means life expectancy is increasing. And in the area around northern New Jersey, New York, the western tip of Long Island, it's bright blue. It is going up dramatically. Life expectancy for women is going up in Southern California. It's going up in odd little pockets of Florida. But, you know, in the areas with the highest Republican voter turnout and the highest incidence of right-wingism, women are living shorter lives, demonstrably, measurably shorter lives, while at the same time, those little places where maybe those brand new millionaires are living, it's going up. So it's not just our money they're getting, it's our life.
Perfect. Right, it makes perfect sense, because we have a for-profit healthcare system, the regions, the economies that have the money, and the New York area, having moved from there a little more than a year ago, I guess, you could tell that section of the country was not affected at all by the recession because Wall Street was not affected. They hardly lost any jobs in Wall Street and in New York because that economy has remained vibrant because they're the ones that got bailed out. They got saved. They're in a bubble in that New York metropolitan area. They are in a complete bubble because they own the politicians, they run the country out of Wall Street, and they did not get affected. They got saved. And it's as simple as that. Their tax base stayed very strong.
That's a profound statement, Andy. That's a profound statement. They didn't get affected. They got saved.
That's right. And the rest of the country, Main Street, went down the toilet bowl, and they were ratcheted up and propped up. And you would think, if this was a just country, which of course it is not a just country at all, that New York should have got the brunt of the hit because they caused it with their malfeasance and their injustice and their fraud. But no. Totally counterintuitive, just like you just said, where the red areas where the people are getting totally slammed and they don't even understand it, and the old Thomas Frank stuff where they vote against their interest is the same garbage.
And, you know, one of the things that's most fascinating out of all this is that I actually started thinking about this, and this was what came to mind when you said, you know, we're number one, USA, USA. The life expectancy rates for women in the United States are, in some instances, 50 years behind the best-performing life expectancy countries. You know, your Swedens,
well,
your Denmarks.
Oh, yeah. We're above the OECD average, for sure. Like I said, my understanding is the average is 78 for the U.S., the average OECD nation, which is 32 nations, is like 79 or 80, something like that. So we're below the average, so there has to be a number of countries ahead of us.
But the idea that in these countries that are ahead of us, that it took 50 years for them to get there, and we're sliding backwards, I mean, this run screaming out the door stuff for me, Andy.
Well, Columbia University has a study out, too, which is put out by Healthcare Now, quotes it, which actually puts us 49th in the world in longevity. The World Health Organization used to have us, like, I think, at 37th. But a Columbia University study last year has us at 49th. Oh, Bob, there is no doubt we are third world in a lot of sections of the United States.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that band going from Texas to West Virginia. Kentucky would fall right in there, and I look at Chinless Mitch McConnell as being one of these pigs with what this guy wants to completely gut every social safety net there is, and he wants to. He mentioned it, an article I have, I wanted to talk about it, was he mentioned starving almost all the agencies in the U.S. government, particularly the SEC and the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trade Committee, just starving those agencies because it'd be good for the country. It's good for the country to starve. They're oppressive, the overregulation. They're freezing our country. They're killing jobs. The lunacy of this coming from a state where the people are just getting totally hammered and probably dying like crazy. Again, another state like Texas where there's more children uninsured than any other state in the United States, and they try to prop up that state as being a model for the rest of the country when there's more uninsured kids there than.
Well, and remember, I mean, but I guess what I'm, slow down, Bob. When you see numbers like declining life expectancy, when you see numbers about illness in poor communities, you also, at least for me, Andy, it sends me on another hunt because all of these things. All of these statistics exist in symbiosis with things that aren't necessarily mentioned. For instance, you mentioned Kentucky. Well, the reddest of the red blobs on that map of Kentucky on the life expectancy map are in a district that is owned by a Democratic congressman by the name of Hal Rogers. Now, this man presides or represents a district a district that is literally the sickest in America.
Right, from coal, center of coal country, no?
Right. And of course, you know, this, I can't look at this life expectancy thing and not remember what I was talking about on Thursday, namely this study that has come out that shows that if you live where mountaintop removal is taking place, there are significant, you know, nearly 25% higher rates of birth defects.
Right, children's deformity.
And if you're born, and you know, some of them may not even be noticeable birth defects. I mean, as I sit here, no one knew as when I was a child growing up or anything. No one knew that I was a walking birth defect, but I am. My guts are all screwed up. I'm lucky to walk. And that's because I had parents who grew up in coal country. And then my mother gave birth to me down in Alabama. But I'm a walking wad of anomalies. And you can't look at one of these without looking to one of the others. It's a wholesale assault. I mean, it's, you know, Thursday night I used the phrase crime against humanity, and I'm not going to quit using that phrase. And what we are talking about with the Republican Party are acts which, if they had been committed, say, in the Third Reich, would have had people in the dock at Nuremberg.
Absolutely. And two, you put a plug in for the movie The Last Mountain, which I did see.
Oh, did you?
And you go into there and you see what happens to people, like at that town Shippensport that has the big coal plant.
Yeah.
And the people that were a stone's throw from the plant, gosh, all the death that they had nearby, all the damage they had to their cars and to the paint on their homes. It's amazing because of the stuff these plants are spewing out because of the age, and they never did get retrofitted properly with the scrubbing.
Bill Rainey sits there, and I mean, he's a sleazy little walking turd of a man, Bill Rainey is.
Did Bobby Kennedy just dismantle him piece by piece?
Absolutely.
God, it was great.
It was a beautiful thing to watch. But, you know, but what a great example. The guy says, well, this here's a modern coal-fired power plant. It's the state of the art. And then the narrator comes on and says, of course, it's never been retrofitted because it was grandfathered in and it's pumping filth. And I breathe that every day because that is less than 50 miles from the top of that stack is at about eye level with where I live.
Well, you see what it does to corrode the paint on cars, where the cars have to be repainted that are near the plant because of the massive corrosion and rust. Can you imagine what that does to your lungs? It must just sear right through your lungs, for God's sakes. Ah, it's incredible. Just the expose that film does. Great film. Great film.
It is amazing. And I got another email earlier today from Carol about having seen it. And she said, I saw it last week, and as a former West Virginian, it was quite emotional for me. One of the most upsetting scenes was of a small hamlet with perhaps six or seven households where six people had died of brain cancer.
Right, and it should only happen six in 100,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
Six in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, not six out of six.
Right. Living next to each other. Yeah, ridiculousness. Another thing, I was listening to one of your podcasts, I believe, and you mentioned Germany and unemployment there.
Mm-hmm.
Just realize in Germany, their unemployment rate is at a 20-year low. The last number I saw was like 7.2%. They're actually lower than they were when the recession started, like in the middle of 2008. They're lower than they were at that time. They are at a 20-year low. Their economy is so on fire. And the main reason is because they protect their workers and they have a much better Hamilton plan oriented economy. And of course, they have labor on their board, so they do not get rid of people and they do different things.
And they don't treat their industry and their markets as mere quarterly profit generators,
right.
You know, it's long-term buy and hold, that kind of thing.
Right, they're long-term investments in the economy, and their major thing is to hold on to employees and do whatever it takes and put together a little cookie jar method. What is it called? Kurzarbeiten or something like that, where they have a fund that actually helps employers to keep people on the job, even if they have to work part-time, just to make sure they do not become unemployed and they maintain their skills so when the economy does get propped up again, they're ready to rock and roll and there's no training costs in the whole nine yards. Matter of fact, in a May 14th New York Times report on all unemployment rates across the world, this guy named Norris, who does a good job on economic issues in the Times. Now I'm forgetting his first name, but I try to read him whenever he writes a piece. But he had the German unemployment rate at 6.3% adjusted to the way it is in the U.S. using the U.S. methods. So he even had it lower.
Yeah, because...
9.1, and they're at 6.3. I mean, this is unbelievably...
Yeah, and remember that under the best of circumstances... And a lot of this started back with Ronald Reagan. We cheat on our unemployment numbers. Because, among other things, I think it did start with Ronald Reagan that we started counting the military as employed persons.
Right, right, right.
So that if you went back and, for instance, if you used the same methodology to calculate unemployment that, say, might have been used in 1933, you would see unemployment, actual unemployment numbers in the United States that were concurrent with 1933, Andy.
Right. Yeah, there's no doubt. If they went back to the old way of calculating, we'd probably be over 10% somewhere, 11%.
And maybe higher.
Yeah.
And that's frightening because, and you know, you mentioned mentioning Germany. It is worth remembering that historically, and this goes back to an anecdote that David in Tennessee related to me that was quite profound to him at the time. The German people have a reason, a very, very, very good reason for never, ever again letting itself have an idled population that has lost its dignity, has lost its will to do anything except rise up. Because, you know, that little bastard with the Charlie Chaplin mustache could never have accomplished what he did without the massive unemployment that attended the collapse of the Weimar Republic.
Right. Well, after World War One, of course, to buy a loaf of bread, you had to get a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks to bring to the local store to buy a loaf of bread, right, because of the inflation that they had.
Right.
And they weren't going to let that happen again. That's for sure. I mean, they're very much inflation.
Yeah, that sense of never again seems to obtain much more effectively inside Germany than it does in. We used to say never again about the Great Depression, and as Paul Krugman recently noted in a review of a book I think Reverbo sent me the link, our never again mission coming out of the Great Depression held true for, you know, some 40 years or so, but then under Richard Nixon they began dismantling it, and the dismantling has not stopped to this day.
Right, we've spoken about this before. There's no doubt the Germans, and in particular Europeans as a whole, have a much better grasp of reality through history than we do. And you just talked about Michelle Bachmann, how she distorts history, and of course that other moron Sarah Palin does the same thing. Well, the Europeans seem to have a much better grasp of what happened in the truth, you know, the reality of what happened after World War One, before World War One, and so forth, of their history than we do. And I think they just their schools
and they don't. I think another part of it is that they don't romanticize it. You know, to this day, if you go down into the Confederacy, you will find people, you know, who are 18 years old romanticizing the Confederacy. That idiot with his pickup truck whose picture I took, the picture of his truck I took before the program and sent it off to Susan. You can see at the website, you know, The guy's got a silhouette of a coal miner crawling on the ground, and it's carved out of a Confederate flag decal, okay? I mean, the layers of lack of understanding, the layers of lack of knowledge, the layers of cultural ignorance that are betrayed by something like that are absolutely stunning. You know, the first underground coal miners in Appalachia were African slaves off the plantation, and they died in their hundreds inside the pits. Okay? But it's all part of a romanticization of the Civil War that persists 150 years later. You know, this is the 150th anniversary of the beginning of it, that persists 150 years later, that frankly the Germans don't seem to be engaged in. Oh, and by the way, Jim writing in, he says, inflation in Weimar, 4 million marks equaled $1, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Well, that's why you needed that wheelbarrow.
Yeah, or maybe a train of them.
Right. Well, American exceptionalism, which gets pushed is something I think would be abhorrent to many Europeans, because the Europeans just want a good social compact with their government and for everybody to have a social safety net and be taken care of, where here we seem to praise that one out of a million millionaire who makes it to the top. I don't think that's the aspiration of your average European at all.
I agree.
Life.
You know, do they have Powerball?
That I'm aware of.
I rest my case. Andy, good to talk to you, my friend.
One more thing, too.
Yeah.
Did you see Sunday New York Times?
I'm not sure which.
The article, Bridge Comes to San Francisco, Made in China label?
No.
You ought to check it out. A story about the Oakland Bay Bridge and how it's being made, the major parts of the bridge are being constructed in China, made me just want to vomit to read the article, because they did it to save $400 million on a $7.2 billion project. That's only 5%. If you take $400 million savings on a $7.2 billion project. So they're doing the major part of the construction, all the steel, all the infrastructure, and they put it on a big boat, and they ship it back over to Oakland Harbor to put it on the bridge. It's an amazing
thing.
And that's tax dollars. Our state tax dollars.
Yeah, what if that steel was made in an American steel mill? What if it was done in an American foundry? What if it was fabricated?
The multiplier effect?
Right, because those are people with jobs paying taxes.
Right. And they have 3,000 people in China working on this project, and the average, they talk to workers there, they have to work like 18 hours a day at $12 a day. Just think of the multiplier if that work were done here.
Oh, absolutely. And let's, you know, let's take a metallurgical moment and note that steel is garbage.
Right. That's the other thing. You know, the Chinese steel has long, the quality problems are, you know, astronomical in anything that comes out of China. Anything they do.
I will never forget, and God rest his soul, or whatever rest his soul, our buddy Kenny, who died around Halloween of 2008. He was a master welder, and he inspected welds where welds really matter. And I will never forget that he emailed me one time these photographs of high pressure steam lines that came from China, and they had rips in them like you would punch in an aluminum can. And he said this can, I remember him, I mean, it really, really stayed with me. He said, Bob, this can only happen when the steel is made under such substandard conditions that it is faulty all the way down to the molecular level. And he said, the most horrifying thing is that this steel is all over the United States.
Wow.
We've been focusing a little bit, for instance, on, we've been talking a little bit about Fort Calhoun out in Nebraska. Now, I imagine there are some high-pressure steam lines somewhere around that reactor. Well, the chances are somewhere approaching absolute that some of those high-pressure steam lines around that reactor are Chinese steel, and they are not up to the purposes for which they are installed.
Well, the thing that bothers me is one thing a private company going to China and outsourcing the work. It's another thing when your own state government with your tax dollars does it too.
And that was the next question I was going to ask. Is this a decision that was made under the Arnold regime?
Absolutely. He's mentioned in the article. If you see, it's on the front page of the Sunday New York Times. Yeah, Arnold is mentioned as being one of the...
Because this was fiscally conservative. Sorry, I'm being an ass.
No, absolutely. Well, that's the reason to save $400 million, which is a chip shot out of a $7.2 billion project. I'm not an economist, but I can easily make an economic case of the multiplier effect.
Yeah, and you can make an equally compelling case for stay off that damn bridge.
Oh, absolutely. It makes me not want to drive over that bridge, period. Not even, and I'm supposed to be happy that a bridge that is a beautiful structure bringing me into one of the most beautiful cities in the United States is made in China? What does that say about us?
It says we're in a pathetic mess. It's heartbreaking.
It is. I mean, we can make bombs. We can't make bridges anymore. We make the biggest goddamn bombs in the world. We can bomb everywhere. But man, we can make these drones. We can't make a goddamn bridge.
Yeah, and Jim noting that even going back, you know, it'll soon be the 100th anniversary, faulty metal in rivets caused the Titanic disaster.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus.
All right, well, thanks a lot for letting me get that out. That's one thing I wanted to discuss with you if I got on your line.
Well,
all right, well, great. I'm looking forward to those history lessons.
Well, it is going to be nothing short of magnificent. And I hope a lot of people will tune in. We'll be running the rerun, and we will be running it'll be up as a podcast, and the Ustream video will just be cool as heck.
I just wish we'd get some Republican lurkers to listen in. Maybe they'd learn something.
It's out there. It's being advertised around here pretty heavily, so there's a possibility they will. You know, I'm not going to offer political comment on it. That's the nice thing about history honestly delivered, is that you don't have to spin it. It is what it is.
Except if you're Ronald Reagan when the facts don't matter.
Because facts are stupid things. Exactly.
Yep.
Andy, take care, my friend.
All right, you too.
Bye now.
Take care of yourself. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Andy calling from California. Yeah, if I do any traveling in that neck of the woods, I know a bridge I'm going to stay off of. You know, when Andy mentioned something a minute ago, saying we can make bombs, I thought of this. Let's just take a second. I'll go right back to the phones.
Yes, we can bomb most any land. On CNN with marching bands. Pour ourselves an ice cold Coke. Make a war. Tell a joke. Yeah. It's all there, all over me. The fear. And insecurity. Yes, I am American. From Pearl Harbor to Afghanistan. Now, Vietnam is history. And brother, that lesson didn't come for free. The politicians, they didn't bleed. Misguided patriots, indeed, indeed, indeed. Are we an empire? Loose, loose, fast. Or can we find a peace that'll last? Is the answer here at home? Home, 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 home. Or is it buried in a foreign storm?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, and I've already gotten a couple of emails, that's Jason Ringenberg. You remember a really hot little band from some years back called Jason and the Scorchers? Well, this is Jason on his own. It's from, golly, what, 2004? The album called Empire Builders. That's called American Reprieve, Jason Ringenberg. The minute Andy said, "Oh, we can make the bombs," that just popped right into my head. There's all kinds of stuff on that album. I thought of Jason's album actually a little earlier today when I was looking at the idiot's truck with the Confederate flag minor in the back of it, because that album also has a magnificent track on it that sounds probably autobiographical. I guess he was touring. We mentioned Germany earlier. He was touring in Germany, and he saw a Confederate flag in Germany. Woof. David in Tennessee noting that when U.S. Steel built a new headquarters building in San Francisco in the late 80s, they built it with Korean steel. Say what? Back then? Yep. U.S. Steel wanted profit margin more than the employment of Americans in 1989. And now, says David, now it's worse. So let's see if anybody stayed on the lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's up, man?
Finally got through this time.
Hallelujah.
How you doing?
Did I hang up on you earlier?
Yes, you did.
Okay, I'm sorry. Like I said,
no problem.
It appears that we had kitty engineering.
Ah, yes.
You know, one button's all it takes. And this thing's got a million on it, and you've got to look at every one. Oh, wait, there it is.
We get that over here, too. The cat decides to send an email.
Yeah, and you know, the cats say the darndest things.
Uh-huh. This, by the way, speaking of emails, did you get the one I sent you with the linky?
Yeah, the Fort Calhoun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I cannot place my faith in 5 feet of sandbags.
No. And it was
the berm collapsed.
The berm collapsed. And yet over the weekend, nothing to see here. This is not the meltdown you're looking for. Move along, citizen. God bless America. 9/11.
Yeah, when you see that nice mushroom plume in Nebraska, you'll know what it's from.
Yep. Oh, I got to tell you, Mark just wrote in a couple of minutes ago. You're going to love this. He said, "It's not all bombs. Not all bombs are made in the U.S. either, Bob. U.S. Marines were getting blown up with their own 81 millimeter mortars in the late 80s through the early 90s. The problem, Taiwanese mortars."
Oh, God.
Can we learn?
We just put the fuses on the wrong end. Oops. Boom. That's what I used to do in the Army, by the way.
Put fuse on mortar?
No, put mortar in tube and duck.
Yeah, that's always exciting.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good. I used to be able to drop one of those in your hip pocket at 2 miles, especially if I had a good spotter.
Big difference those between, you know, I always used to look at those mortar, those the Civil War mortars.
Uh-huh.
Great big round things.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, to be blunt. What's the matter with this country, Cossack? Can't build a bridge. A water-filled berm collapsed in Fort... God almighty! Of course, we didn't have any business building nuclear plants in the first place, but, you know, that's because I'm crazy.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that suddenly they're not talking about a cold shutdown. They're saying that they still have to keep the water circulating through the core for the shutdown.
Right. They say it's been shut down since April. But the thing that's more than a little terrifying, Cossack, is that even though it's been shut down, so it's not technically generating, and it's not technically, you know, fissionizing or whatever, there's a plutonium pool, you know, for those euphemistically named spent fuel rods that Sandra was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Spent like how? Because they're still boiling the water.
Right. Well, they're still hot. I mean, hot. People do not seem to understand that. And they're spent only in as much as they won't keep a reaction going. But that's about the only way that they're spent.
They're still plenty deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, that's the stuff they pile into our depleted uranium warheads. And the stuff is pyrophoric. It hits something hard, it goes boom, it lights on fire.
And it aerosolizes. It aerosolizes at the breech, it aerosolizes at the muzzle.
Yeah, and as sure as hell, it aerosolizes as soon as it hits something. This is not funny. People aren't getting it.
No, and I think I mentioned to Sandra in an email over the weekend. I really do. I mean, I have my buddy who is out there is like a dear friend. You know, he's like a brother to me. And he's got this beautiful wife and two beautiful children, and I have to fight the urge to get on the phone. Get out, go visit the in-law. Go home. You know, come on, West Virginia's a toxic waste place, and I'm telling, go to West Virginia. You know, get thee to the hills, head for the hills.
Yeah. And you got the thing about radioactivity, right? The Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
YouTube segment.
Yeah.
Get a chance to launch it?
I have not yet because, it's been a very busy day to say the least. John Fox and I have been, in deep technological consultation over the, upcoming broadcast from Concord College.
Ah, okay. PRISM, West Virginia, correct?
Yes, PRISM. And again, I have to reiterate that for people who love history or people who want to know history and want to understand the underpinnings of how this country got started, there will be no better place anywhere to get all of that information than right there. And we'll kick up at, I think, 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and we'll keep everybody apprised of when it's going to happen and what's going to be going on, and it's going to be nothing short of amazing.
Are you going to be on tomorrow, or...?
No. Tomorrow is a travel day, and in fact, by this time tomorrow, I will be back deep in consultation with John again.
Ah, okay. Well, speaking about the flotilla, I remember having a discussion with an Israeli who was here,
mm-hmm.
and I started pointing out that, perhaps the Israelites have to possession of the land 2,000 years ago, but 2,000 years of leaving a place is considered, you know, you've kind of lost your rights to the place, and the Palestinians are native to that land. He says, "Well, yeah. Well, look what you did to your natives."
Precisely our point.
Yeah, I had to agree with that, but I said that's not a good thing.
That's not a moral justification.
Yeah, it's not something to be proud of, and certainly not something to build on. You know.
No, not at all.
That's an insane. That's an insane way of arguing your case, the way I see it.
And in fact, you know, I mean, there were a number of different peoples living there 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. And yeah, just because some God-struck Britain wrote a declaration about it doesn't make it theirs any more than the Israeli self-declaring independence. You know, they're screaming about Palestinians declaring statehood in the General Assembly. Well, that's what you guys did. Remember?
1948.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, you know, there are still people around who are alive and were alive back then and who remember. You know. But, I have to put in a quick plug for something coming up right after your show tonight. Hot Coffee on HBO.
Oh, yeah?
That is a definite must-see. You know what it's about, right?
No.
Hot Coffee is an examination of the way the right wing has spun the McDonald's case all out of proportion.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I've hammered on that for years.
Yeah.
Well, and, of course, you know, there was a whole industry devoted to libeling and slandering and slurring that poor woman. Is she still even alive? Third degree burns to her almost her entire genital area. McDonald's had been warned time and time and time again that somebody was going to get hurt, but they called the accounting department. The accounting department said, don't worry.
Yep.
We're making more money off the coffee than we'll have to pay out in the judgment.
Correct.
And by the time the right wing sleaze industry got done with it, it was, that dumb woman didn't even know coffee from McDonald's was hot. She just won the legal lottery. I mean, that message itself, Cossack, got a life of its own. By the time that George Bush was running for election, not re-election, in 2004, he was referring to people who got the wrong leg cut off in a hospital as having, and this is a quote, won life's lottery.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that's going to thrill them a whole hell of a lot. They're going to have the other leg taken off anyway.
Well, golly, I can't wait. I'd like to see that very much. I really, really would. Cossack, I got to roll, brother, but we will talk, well, not soon, but I'll be back behind the microphone by about the 15th of July.
All right. We'll talk to you then.
You take care.
Take care and have fun.
Oh, check it out. I will be.
All right.
See ya. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And just a reminder, if you want to search out the Ustream video for the American History Prism, PRISM series, just go to ustream.tv and type in American History Seminar, and it should pop up by then. It's misspelled. It actually says seminary. Haven't figured out how to change that. But American History Seminary, it'll take you right to the Dr. Bill Prism Summer Academy, and it is going to be nothing short of stunning. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Not a lot. Been a long time since I talked to you.
It has been, Vince.
I relocated.
Really? You're out of the biggest city in South Georgia?
Yes, I am. I am now, I traded in one insane, decrepit city for another one. I actually work out of Detroit now.
Oh, wow. That's a long ride.
Yep, I'm up in Michigan now. Actually passed through your area on my way up, too. Tried to get in contact with you, but it just wasn't, we weren't clicking.
Oh, darn. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It happens. I have, like, no net access right now, though, so I heard just from the grapevine that you were going to be off the air for a while and wanted to drop in and say hey and just say hey to everyone, you know, let everybody know I hadn't fallen off the face of the planet.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. I mean, I want to be clear. I'm not going to be off the air. There will be content on the Horn stream. It's just going to be this series of history lectures. And,
right.
And frankly, it's so incredibly important that I can't encourage people more strongly enough to tune in. Especially, you know, as I've said, with the onslaught of the right wing simply making stuff up and inventing history as they go, you can't overestimate this.
Speaking of which, Bachman is running?
Yeah, I know. Isn't this fun? Yeah, and she wants to live in the America, she wants to live in the kind of America John Wayne Gacy lived in.
No joy.
What a moron. What a moron.
Although I gotta say this, not that I am in any way, shape, or form encouraging it, but if she, could you imagine her and Palin on the same ticket? And if just, never mind the horrors that would result from it, if they actually got in, could you imagine the fun Leno and Letterman and all them people would have for the next 4 years? Jon Stewart would be like must-see TV, more than he already is.
Oh, you know, my even my own life would get interesting. But I can't put that ahead of the well-being of the country.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm not encouraging.
No, what Michelle Bachmann's running for is vice president.
Oh, okay.
She wants to be Tim Pawlenty's, but you know Tim Pawlenty would be a problem because you can't have vice president and president from the same state. So I guess she needs Willard Romney, or maybe Rick Goodhair Perry, or no, it can't be.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, that's why Richard B. Dick. Big time, five death Dick Cheney had to rent a post office box in Wyoming because he and George actually lived in the same state, to wit, Texas.
Gotcha. Which may I also point out how funny I think it is that Rick Perry, you know, on one second is wanting to secede from the union, then is screaming for federal funds, and now wants to run it.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I just thought that was...
Only a Republican head could hold that much cognitive dissonance and not explode. But then again, Rick Goodhair Perry's hair is so lacquered down, it probably, if it did explode, it would just kind of go whoomp and expand and then contract back.
And I still can't believe that job they did on Wiener.
That was a setup. And I don't even know how many people even understand that the original tweets that got him in the hot water were a setup to begin with.
Oh, absolutely. Now, granted, he walked right into it. I am in no way, shape, or form, you know, letting him off that particular hook. But for crying out loud, you know, how many other... You get Republicans who get caught cruising in bathrooms and, you know, seeing, you know, hookers and stuff and getting dressed up in diapers, and they still are in office.
Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Vince, I wish we had more time, but I got to blow out of here, brother.
Go ahead and blow, man. Talk to you later.
All right. Stay safe up there.
Definitely will. I'll keep in touch.
All right. Bye now. Vince, who used to call from Jacksonville and now calls from Detroit. So that brings us to the end of the program and the last actual program like this for a while. I'll be back behind the microphone, oh, goodness me, on the 15th, assuming the 15th is just a minute. Here, let's find out real quick. We got a sec. Yeah, I'll be back on the 15th, which is a Friday. So our next show together will be a Front Porch on the Friday, July the 15th. However, let me reiterate, programming will be on the Horn in all of that interim. This is the Prism American History Series. And perhaps you think you know all about American history you could possibly need to know. Once you're done listening to or viewing the Prism series, you will be surprised what you don't. So tune in. You will be glad you did. So that's that. In the meantime, those of you who can hit the PayPal button, it would be very appreciated if you would. No one has this evening. That's going to make this little drive tomorrow a little bit exciting. We'll get there. We'll get there. Thanks, everybody, all of you who make it all happen. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, Betsy, Texas Betsy, our blogger, our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, John Fox, who has put in countless hours and will put in more yet as we go forward on this project, and Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, he never sends a bill, but he also needs help. And everything that happens there is what makes what happens here happen here, apart from me standing on the porch and screaming. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now.